Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth story is with Amber Thornton. Amber worked hard for a healthy pregnancy and an unmedicated vaginal birth, but she didn't expect her water to release before 39 weeks. Despite an early hospital admission, labor progressed right along until it didn't. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Unspoken Stories, a new podcast from March of Dimes featuring real stories from the joys of parenthood to what happens when things don't go according to plan. Subscribe to Unspoken Stories for free wherever you get your podcasts and learn more by visiting unspokenstories.org. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Love Every, delivering science-backed, eco-friendly toys tailored to your child's stage of development that you will both love. Go to loveevery.com and for a limited time, use the code BIRTHFUL for $15 off your subscription. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you for making this podcast part of your day and for telling your friends and family and even sharing about it on your social media feeds. I truly, truly, truly do appreciate it. And if you happen to share on Instagram, make sure you add the hashtag birthful so I can see it and give it some love. Also, if what you hear is helpful, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. To support this show, support our sponsors, which in today's case are Unspoken Stories and Love Every. Now, if you find you are getting a lot out of this podcast, I hope you consider becoming an official Birthful Patreon by joining the Birthful community at patreon.com/birthful. And as a thank you, you'll have access to ad-free episodes, including your own private RSS feed, so you can plug it into however you listen to podcasts, and also access to the extra content that I create for each episode. In some cases, this is extra audio. Other times, it's helpful handouts. Sometimes, it's both. Sometimes, we do a live hangout. For example, for this episode's extra audio content, I chat more with Amber about her postpartum experience, and she shares the things that have been invaluable to her during those first few weeks with her newborn. In fact, she shared three things that have been vital for her mental health and three physical things that have made her life so much easier as she cares for her baby. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. Now, if what you're looking for is information, more vital information on how to not just survive but thrive with your newborn, then go check out my postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. Do it now before baby arrives. All right. So Amber has been an avid Birthful listener for a while, and right after she had her baby, she reached out wanting to share her story. I think this is probably the earliest any new parent has come on the show. Her son, Cedric, was 4 weeks old when we talked. I truly appreciate so much her wanting to share her story and talk about the extra fears that she had to face by being a Black woman giving birth in the current U.S. maternity system. And moreover, how that fear overshadowed the meeting of her baby. If you have no clue of what I'm talking about, the facts are that compared to white women, Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to experience a pregnancy-related death. Black women are more likely to experience preventable maternal death. Black women's heightened risk of pregnancy-related death spans income and education levels, so changes in those factors don't affect the risk. And Black women experience more maternal health complications. The reasons for this are complex, but they're not genetic, and they're, as I mentioned before, not related to educational level or whether you receive prenatal care or not, and they are not because of socioeconomic status. The reasons, as concluded by research, are racism and chronic oppression. So before we talk, I want to let you know this because it is a hugely important issue, and I also wanted you to know what Amber is referring to when she brings it up in her story. I have linked on the show notes several resources and articles for you to learn more about the topic, so please click through and inform yourself. And I also wanted to underline and place in bold, with lots of exclamation points, that this disparity is not the fault of Black women. It is the fault of the system and the culture of chronic stress from both direct and institutionalized racism that can affect as far as 3 generations. These disparities are true for other people of color as well, such as Native Americans, refugees, Latinx, and others, but the rates are harsher for Black people. Please hold this in context as you hear Dr. Thornton's story. Also note that this episode makes reference to chemical pregnancy loss and miscarriage. Here we go. Hello, Amber. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And I should say Amber and your son. I can hear him in the background.
Yeah, I know. He should be going to sleep soon.
And he's itty bitty. How old is he now?
He's 4 weeks. He turned 4 weeks yesterday, so he still is really tiny.
Wow, happy first month.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's think back. Before we start, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am, my name is Amber. I live in the DC area. I've been here for about a year with my husband. And professionally, I'm a psychologist by trade. But now I'm a new mom, so just trying to work on integrating both of those things.
Oh, for sure. Do mm-hmm. you find that your experience as a psychologist has helped you navigate all these changes you've gone through? Or is it one of those things that you can't see the forest for the trees?
I think it's helped a lot, actually, because I work with children and adults. But just, I don't know, I think just my experience with like emotions and transitions, I kind of apply all of that to my life. So I think it's really helped me go through the transitions and kind of understand them a little bit more. So I think that's helped a lot. It's helped me kind of get through things a lot more smoothly.
Mm. And even though this is like something I tend to ask at the end, because we're talking about it right now, I'm going to ask, like, what are some of those things that you find you've had to, some of those tools that you've had to reach for as you navigate mm-hmm. this transition?
Yeah, well, actually, we might come back to it, but I'm going to skip to, I guess, postpartum. I think that part has been kind of interesting. Some parts have been challenging. And for me, I found myself in moments telling myself, you know, this is a moment. It is not forever. And just kind of acknowledging my emotions without getting too stuck. Just, you know, again, reminding myself that it's a moment. It's not going to be like this forever. It helps me to appreciate the moment, even when it's difficult. So that's one tool I've been using a lot.
Mm-hmm. I like that tool. Yeah. And it's similar to that. This too shall pass. Like, this is just
exactly.
This. Yeah.
Yes.
I always like to tell my my doula clients about day 3. And that's like the epitome of this is a moment. Because day 3 after birth tends to be the moment where your hormones are toppling and babies trying to get your milk to come in, so they want to eat nonstop, and you're probably being sent home, and your milk's coming in, so your breasts are getting hard, and like it all happens that day, and mm-hmm. it can be so overwhelming, and people think like, oh my god, if this is my new reality, I can't just. It's just day 3. It's just day 3.
Exactly. Yep. I've been doing that a lot and it helps.
Good. I love it. So let's go back to, you know, a year ago, when you first found out you were pregnant, or in your journey towards this, how did you prepare and what were your wishes? What were your thoughts and expectations for birth?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So going back, I first found out I was pregnant September. It was September of 2018. And we had actually been trying to get pregnant. So it wasn't a huge surprise. And I found out pretty early, found out about 4 weeks. And so really my hope, well, I guess to backtrack, prior to that, I had had a chemical pregnancy. And I don't like to call it a miscarriage because it feels like it was too... I don't know, it was different. It was a chemical pregnancy. And so I had a positive test in January of 2018. And that was my first time ever being pregnant. And then it quickly terminated itself. And so that was really hard because I think I had thought something was wrong with my body, and it gave me a lot of anxiety about pregnancies in the future. So that's kind of how I went into this pregnancy, unfortunately. And I had a lot of anxiety that first trimester just about whether, you know, I was going to be able to maintain the pregnancy, or, you know, whether something was going to happen, or also because it just felt so surreal. I kept telling myself, like, no, this can't be real. I'm not going to have a baby. And so I really tried to manage my anxiety a lot. But unfortunately, that first trimester was not fun because my anxiety was just so high. It was very high.
Was the previous chemical pregnancy, when did it terminate?
It terminated. I found out at about 5 weeks in, I would say maybe 4 days later, it terminated.
Right. So, do you find that those first few weeks until the sort of that time where your previous pregnancy had ended, that those were filled with more anxiety and just part of what you were trying to do in terms of like a protective mechanism of saying, this might not be real, this might not be real?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think so, honestly. I think it was just trying to, you know, not get my hopes up too high, but at the same time, it was just making it very unenjoyable.
Well, and I'm sorry that you had that first trimester experience that you weren't able to relax into it.
Yeah, me too. And I think, you know, it's just a learning lesson. And next time, you know, if there's a baby number two, hopefully we can kind of have an easier time. But it did make it really hard.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to, what changed into trimester two that did you ever get to enjoy your pregnancy a bit?
Yeah, I did. I think just the more time had passed and the more prenatal appointments I had, and, you know, I saw things were going well, especially I would say after around week 14 is when I really noticed I started to feel better. And then it was like, okay, I think this is really happening. Mm-hmm. So I really just think it was time and, you know, hearing, you know, that everything was looking great at my appointments, and finally reaching that point where they say, you know, the risk of miscarriage drastically decreases. That was really helpful to me.
Mm-hmm. And so then once it was good and it was real and everything was going well, Did you switch tacks and start focusing on preparing? And what, if so, what did you do?
Yeah, so I did start preparing. And for me, I just wanted it to be a very healthy pregnancy. I wanted to be, you know, active, because prior to being pregnant, I eat really well. I exercise a lot. So I tried to keep that up. I still was going to the gym pretty regularly, eating well. And also I then at that point started to prepare my mind for actually giving birth, because that just seems like, I don't know, it was just such a big thing. So I started to listen to more podcasts and read some books, because at that time I was hoping for an unmedicated vaginal birth. So I really was trying to get my mind right for what that would entail.
Mm-hmm. What books are you reading?
I should have got the name for you. I think it's called Joyful Something. Man, maybe I can give the name to you after this, but I think it's Finding Your Birth Joy. I think that's what it's called. I read that one. That one was really helpful, just about how to take the fear out of childbirth, because I realized I had a lot of fear about childbirth. And then also I started to read What to Expect When You're Expecting. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those like old classics that everybody reads. So I read like the first few chapters of that as well, and that was helpful. And then there's another book that we had, the 411 something. So that one, those three, I kind of kept in rotation.
Yeah, and I'll follow up with you for links to add in the show notes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, of course, this podcast was really helpful. I really loved the birth stories. That really helped me a lot, because I think not only did it kind of help me prepare for what birth might be, but then also just all the different things that could come with birth stories and birth experiences. So that was super helpful, too.
Yeah. And then you're here telling your story now.
Mm-hmm,
awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So So you prepared your mind, prepared your body, were eating well, you were reading your books. Then how did it all start?
Mm-hmm. How did labor start?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So labor started, I was 38 weeks and like 6 days. And I remember at the time I was trying to decide, do I want to continue working all the way through pregnancy? And I thought that I did until I got to the third trimester, because that it started to get, I don't know, I just started to get really tired and heavy all of a sudden. And so I remember it was a Monday. That Monday I went to work and I had planned to work that full week. And then I was going to take off at week 39. But that Monday I was just thinking like, oh my gosh, I don't think I can work this week because I am so tired. I was so tired and I was like taking naps in between my clients and I just felt so heavy. And I honestly thought I was going to have to take off for week 38 as well. But I got through the day, I got home, and then that evening, me and my husband were just watching TV, and I felt like a trickle. And then I went to the bathroom because I thought, oh my gosh, did my water just break? And it did. And so my water broke that night, that Monday night. It was May 20th at around 9 o'clock at night. So that's how it started. And it was very unexpected because I just wasn't thinking about it. And honestly, the whole time I kept telling myself, I do not want to go into labor at night because that means less sleep. And of course it happened at night. So at that time I called the hospital just because that's always what I heard you should do. Call the hospital if your water breaks just to let them know and see what they want you to do. And so for me, I actually was group B strep positive. And we can talk more about that if you like. But because of that, I definitely needed to go to the hospital because I did decide to go ahead and receive antibiotic treatment for the group B strep because they wanted me to come in, get antibiotics before giving birth. Mm-hmm. So it was really important for me to get there sooner than later.
Yeah. And at that point, did you have a bag packed? Were you like, did you have to run to the mm-hmm. hospital or prepare a little baby before you did?
So my bag was already packed because I'm a planner. My bag had been packed for weeks. And so my bag was already packed. All I had to do was put a few things in. And my husband packed his bag fairly quickly, but we weren't in a rush because at that time the water had just broken and it wasn't like a big gush. It was just a little trickle. But I hadn't felt any contractions yet. So it felt like we had time. So we weren't rushing. We just kind of slowly gathered our things, decided what to do with our dog. And then we got to the hospital about an hour and a half later.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Let's take a break here so that we don't have to then we get into the story and not take a break. We'll be right back. Now, you know that I am a big fan of sharing real and honest stories, which is why I want to let you know about a new podcast from March of Dimes. It's called Unspoken Stories, hosted by mom, actress, and advocate Tatiana Ali. And you can listen to it for free wherever you get your podcasts or by visiting unspokenstories.org. We see a lot of perfect images of pregnancy, birth, and parenting, even though we know that no pregnancy, birth, or parent is perfect. That can be misleading and even isolating, but more and more people are standing up to tell their real and often difficult stories. And in the Unspoken Stories podcast, you will hear some of these stories, from the joy of parenting and the complexities of dealing with illness with actress and mom Jamie Lynn Sigler, a mom coping with loss and raising two toddlers, to the realities of parenting a baby born prematurely. These moms and dads have the courage to speak up and share their laughter, tears, and triumphs so that no one has to feel alone in their experience. For example, in the first episode, you will hear from Patina, who always dreamed of being a mom, but her family had a history of pregnancy-related complications. After losing her twins, Ava and Cole, during childbirth, Patina courageously goes on to have the family she's always dreamed of. I hope you will join this important conversation, whether you are a parent or are considering becoming one. Subscribe to Unspoken Stories for free wherever you get your podcasts and learn more by visiting unspokenstories.org. That's unspokenstories.org. And we are back. Okay, so about an hour and a half later, you guys made it to the hospital. What happened then?
So we got to the hospital. Again, we were taking our time. It just didn't feel like a big rush. We kind of were just a little shocked, but still enjoying the moment. And that's in the car is when I started to feel some of the contractions. And that was the first time I had ever felt them, because I have a few friends who have been pregnant and they experienced some like late in the pregnancy, but I hadn't at all. And so I started to feel them, and I was like, oh, this is what they've been talking about this whole time, the contractions. So I felt them in the car, and then in the garage when we were walking up to the hospital. So that was kind of cool. So we got to the hospital, and I actually was 4 centimeters dilated. Whoa. And again, that was a surprise to me, because I was 4 centimeters. And again, it was surprising because I hadn't felt anything until my water broke. And so I had not expected to be 4 centimeters already. So they admitted me right away.
Mm-hmm. And so contractions were going, you were 4, they got your IV for the antibiotics. What was your state of mind at that point?
At that point, I was really calm, and I was so surprised because, so I'm one that typically has anxiety in hospitals. Like any other area of my life, I'm pretty calm. But like when it comes to doctors and hospitals and medical things, I get really nervous. And so I thought that I was going to be very nervous, but I guess maybe just the work that I did prior to birth, just trying to calm myself, really helped. Because once I got admitted and I was in there, I was so calm. I was happy. I was excited. I felt like I was managing the pain of the contractions pretty well. So it was a good time, as good as it could be. I was excited. And so, yeah, they got the IV going for the antibiotics, met the nurses. We got into the room and we were just ready to ride out the contractions. Mm-hmm. So I felt good at that point.
Well, I'm glad you were excited and feeling calm and happy for it. That's great. And you didn't have that like sort of white coat hypertension thing.
Nope. I usually do, but that time I did not. So I was really happy about that, because I had also, I think, listened to your podcast and read about how when you are nervous or stressed out or not feeling safe, that can really stall labor, and I did not want that. So I was mm-hmm. very happy that I felt so calm.
And so then labor continued to pick up. What happened?
Mm-hmm. It did. So labor continued to pick up. And so again, I was hoping for an unmedicated vaginal birth, and labor progressed beautifully. It was beautiful. So I'm trying to get my time right. I got in there, I was 4 centimeters. It progressed pretty quickly. And this is when things started to get a little hairy, because initially the contractions felt painful but manageable. But I don't know, like within an hour or two, they started to really come on strong, and I felt unprepared. They were just, I don't even know how to describe them. People asked me what they were like, and it was just like, one moment they felt manageable, and then the next moment they came on quicker and stronger. And then at one point I remember saying, I'm not getting a break, because the contractions just, they were just so intense. And so at that point, you know, I was trying, because we didn't have a doula, and that was something I had made the decision this first time. I just wasn't sure if I needed one. And now looking back on it, I wonder how I would have done with the contractions if I would have hired the doula. But in that moment, I was trying to do a lot of things that I had read about. Like I had my birth ball. I was getting up and walking around. My husband was doing the counter pressure on my back and my hips, and it was just, it was so intense. And so at that time I had started to entertain the idea of getting an epidural, because mm-hmm. I felt like I wasn't getting a break with the contractions.
Was there a tub available for you, or you just didn't feel like getting in a tub?
Nope, there was no tub. There was a shower, but I didn't feel like getting in the shower. You know, when I felt like I wanted to get up and walk around, it was just, it was a lot. Mm-hmm. And so no tub, unfortunately. I wish I would have had access to a tub, but I didn't even feel like getting into the shower. So, yeah.
So you were thinking about an epidural. And so then did you go for it?
I did. I did. So it was, yeah, I went ahead for the epidural and I was really, in the moment, I was very disappointed and I was doing a lot of crying. You know, I remember saying, this is not what I wanted, because I had felt like I had worked so hard up until that point to prepare my mind for an unmedicated birth. And even just, you know, in the few hours I was in the hospital, when I got the epidural, I was 7 centimeters. And so, and that had been about 4 or 5 hours. So it progressed so quickly. And so I know I was really disappointed, but once I got the epidural, I felt so much better physically. I just felt so much better. And, you know, at that point it was kind of like, well, this is what needed to happen. And so I had.
Yeah. And it's there for a reason. I mean, there's no, I know it's hard when you don't plan on it and then you feel like it seems you were crying, that you were feeling that you were quote unquote failing somehow, but there's no failure. There's just, you just do what's right for you. Yeah. And that's what you needed at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. In that moment, I definitely needed it because I couldn't imagine continuing. I don't know. It just felt like the contractions were not ending. Like I remember hearing about the wave and that for a while I was getting the wave, but after a while it was no wave. It was like continuous and it was very painful. So I got the epidural when I was 7 centimeters and I don't regret that at this point.
Mm-hmm. And the epidural, so you were feeling really great. It's like, oh, I can get a break. Did you nap? Did you start feeling different sensations? How was the epidural?
Yeah, so the epidural, I've always been so afraid of an epidural. It just sounds scary, but honestly, doing it, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. Of course, that's always how it is. And I, you know, that epidural experience was honestly probably the best it could have been, because I always knew that if I did get an epidural, I don't want to be totally immobile. And that wasn't the case. I could still move a little bit. I still felt my legs a little bit, but the contractions didn't feel the contractions, but I still could feel my limbs a little bit. So it was a nice happy medium of, I don't want to be totally numb, but I want some relief from the pain. And so it was a great experience getting that. And so once I got it, it was, what time was it? It was maybe 3 or 4 in the morning. And so at that point I just rested. Me and my husband, we were like, okay, well, I'm feeling better. Let's just go to sleep until we get to 10 centimeters. And that's what we did. And it was very helpful.
Mm-hmm. So how did you know you were at 10 and it was time to stop resting?
Mm-hmm. So rested for about 2-3 hours. And then I had one of the doctors come in and check. And they were like, okay, you're at 10. And so it was really as simple as that. It came in, checked me, and I was at 10 centimeters. And that was about 8 in the morning. Mm-hmm. At 8 in the morning on Monday, I was 10 centimeters. And then they gave me a few minutes to kind of just get up and, well, not get up, but wake up a little bit. And then it was time to push.
Mm-hmm. And how was the pushing? Mm-hmm. Were you feeling any pressure, any sensations, any urges to put? Were you feeling anything to go with it?
So once I got the epidural, not necessarily, no. I'm trying to remember. In the beginning, no. And so what happened, you know, they kind of instructed me when to push because I still couldn't feel any contractions. So with that, the pushing was in the beginning really easy for me because I didn't feel the contractions. I was being directed to push. And the one thing that I actually didn't like, though, even though it felt easy, it was I didn't know how well I was doing. And I guess this is ultimately why I wanted to have an unmedicated birth, because, you know, they would encourage me to push and then, you know, they would, you know, say, oh, you're doing so well, but I just couldn't feel it. So I didn't know how well I was doing. And I was very skeptical about whether they were telling me the truth or whether I was really doing anything, because I just couldn't feel it. But I just had to trust, you know, that I was doing something. And so that was kind of, I wish that I could feel this to know what I'm doing and to really feel my body. But that was one of the downsides. But otherwise, it felt easy because I was just, you know, pushing when they told me to do it and you know, just going with it. Unfortunately, though, the pushing was not as successful. And so I ended up pushing for about 2 hours with the nurses, and the doctor came in to check. He actually came in to check the first hour and said, we're not making as much progress, but let's continue. And in about an hour, if we're not making much more progress, we should think about other options, meaning the C-section. And that was really the first time that I had even entertained the idea of possibly needing to have a C-section. So I was really, you know, kind of like, okay, we have to make this work. So that second hour, we pushed some more. And unfortunately, doctor came in and checked and said he still wasn't making much progress. And actually what was happening was he was feeling some coning of his head. And so that was super discouraging because I did not want a C-section. I did not want a C-section. And so at that time, I kind of advocated for myself a little bit. I asked the doctor, okay, are we in any rush? Is the baby in any distress? And he said, no, the baby's doing fine, not in any distress. There's no rush. And so I asked for some time to just kind of move around a little bit. I didn't get out of bed because I couldn't walk as well because I was still a little numb, but I changed positions in bed. Like I got on all fours just to kind of rock a little bit and try pushing in that position. They set the bed where it was like I was sitting up and tried to push that way or just kind of stay that way, just trying to do anything we could to see if the baby could change his position. Because what the doctor was saying was that the baby was in a position where his head and shoulders were not going to make it through the canal because it was, I don't know, in a weird position where it was too much, not enough space for how he was positioned. And so that was another moment where I wondered if I had a doula, how would that be different? Because I was just doing things that I had previously learned and read about. But if I had a doula, I just wonder, you know, what other things could have been done or, you know, what more could I learn about what was going on in that moment to help?
Right. And did they tell you, so you were fully dilated, did the doctor mention station at all, like in terms of how low his head was?
Yes, I think he said two, I forget the positive and the negative, I forget. I want to say a one or a two. I forget which one, positive or negative, which one means which. So you probably know more about what that means.
So the reason I'm asking for the station is if you go, so if you draw an imaginary line between your sit bones, your ischial spines in the pelvis, that's the zero. And usually, so what, like when you're pregnant, the baby's floating. So it's high up floating. And as the head comes down and engages, it goes from like -3, -2, -1, 0, +1, +2, +3. Usually baby's starting to crown, +4, mm-hmm. +5, baby's out. So whether it's a plus or minus does make a difference because we don't know if it's higher up or further down. So. Yeah.
It was definitely a plus now that you say that. And I think he was between like +1 and +2.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, +1, +2, he was further in than the zero. So he was somewhat like the head was coming through. It's just circumstances come together and it's hard to say like, why did we get here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what one of the doctors or the doctor or the nurse, I forget which one, had said was that what they thought happened was that he had turned a little too quickly. I guess the position that he was in would have been more helpful if he was further down. But he was already in that position and wasn't further down yet. So I don't know if that means anything to you either, but that's what they told me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to say. We don't have those cameras, you know, to go in and actually see what positioning they're in. And Usually when there's something stuck, you do the things that you were doing. You move and move and move and move. But with the epidural, there's only so much you can move. So it's hard to say, maybe doing a lunge would have, you just do different, different hip positionings.
Yeah.
Let's take another quick break. When we come back, I want to hear how it seems like you had a cesarean, how the cesarean ended up being for you, and then a bit about postpartum. We'll be right back. Okay, so I have to tell you how completely obsessed I am with the toy subscription boxes from Love Every, and here's why. The thing is, babies develop their brains and abilities incrementally, organized in consecutive windows of receptiveness where their brains and bodies are ready and eager to learn. This means that what a 3-month-old is ready and able to do is very different from what a 5-month-old is interested in. And matching the right toy for the right age makes life so much more gratifying for you and your child. At Love Every, they not only understand the developmental importance of providing your child with the right toy for every stage, they've made it their mission by putting together an advisory team of neuro and behavioral scientists, psychologists, occupational therapists, and all kinds of other baby and child development experts to create stage-supportive toys that are as appropriate as they are gorgeous and eco-friendly. We are talking responsibly sourced woods, non-toxic water-based finishes, 100% organic cotton, and BPA and phthalate-free plastics. So for example, here's what's in the Explorer box that I got, which is intended for 9 and 10 months old. There is a peekaboo blanket, a first set of blocks, different shape bean bags, stacking rings with a tube and a baby ball, a wooden Montessori egg cup, 3 different little grip canisters, a picture book on opposites and a book on feelings, with both books filled with pictures of actual kids, by the way. And the box also includes a play guide with ideas on how to use these items, a suggested order in which to introduce them, and ideas on other activities you can do, like, for example, an age-appropriate house tour. Feel confident that you are giving your little ones a great start with quality, reasonably priced toys from Love Every. Organized and delivered to your door right when your child is ready for them. For a limited time, Love Every is offering my listeners a special discount when you subscribe to the Play Kit boxes. Just enter my code BIRTHFUL at checkout and you'll get $15 off. That's $15 off your subscription at loveevery.com. That's LOVEVERY.com. So only one E between Love and Every. LOVEVERY.com with promo code BIRTHFUL at checkout. And we're back with Amber talking about her birth story. And yeah, it's so like one of the things that is a little bit of a mantra in my doula world is you don't go down the what if. Because, you know, what if it was a different day of the week? What if the sun was shining? What if, like, you have, it's really hard to know how things would make a difference. And, you know, and then you go down that what if, and it's like, well, what if you'd moved more? Or what if you've had a doula? Or what if you had a different doctor? Or if, what if you gave birth at home? Or what if, you know, it's just all the what ifs are interminable.
Yep, and though I went through all of those what ifs, especially the what if I had a doula, what if I didn't need the epidural, what if I had a different doctor, all of those things. But I've kind of made peace with it, so I think you're right. I don't do the what if as much as I did in that moment.
It's really hard not to do it, though. I hear you, because you want an answer. You want a clarity as to what led me this way to see if maybe we can do it differently next time.
Yep.
So at what point, so you pushed for 2 hours, and when the doctor came back in, was it pretty much like, yeah, this is it? Or, you know, you advocated for more time. How much time did you get?
I got another hour. So that was total about 3 hours, that first 2 hours of pushing, and then that last hour of me changing positions and pushing in different positions. Then after that hour, the doctor came in, checked again, and nothing had changed. And I just remember being so discouraged, because the nurses were so encouraging while I was pushing and saying, oh, you're doing a great job. And then the doctor to come in and say, no, this isn't working. And it was just, I was so discouraged. And so at that time, that was when the doctor said, you know, I don't want to continue to have you push, because he was really concerned about the baby's head and the coning that he felt. And so he did tell me that the C-section was probably the best option. So he gave me some time to compose myself because I was really upset about the C-section, because in my mind, it felt like, okay, I wanted the unmedicated birth. I wanted the vaginal birth. I didn't get that. Now I'm having a C-section, and this is not what I wanted at all. So, you know, he gave me and my husband some time, and luckily my husband is really great. He's very level-headed, and he's a great person. And he really helped me understand that, you know, at this point, we got to move forward. It's going to be fine. This is what's for the best, and we're going to have a baby. And so it was helpful to kind of just have that moment where just he and I kind of talked about it. And then I was as ready as I could be to go. But I was really, I was discouraged. And I was also just scared. I was really scared about the procedure, about, you know, just in the moment, how the procedure would go, but then also the recovery. I wasn't prepared for a C-section recovery because I hadn't even entertained that in all the preparing that I had done. So I was so scared. I think that's just the best way to say it. I was scared going into it.
What you said, your husband was reassuring and gave you some clarity into the moment. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that helped you be less scared or diminish that feeling?
The fear, other than the nurses were great. I have really great nurses, and they also, you know, were just telling me, you know, you did such a great job. We're right here. And so them being so kind and caring and encouraging, that kind of helped diminish my fear. But a lot of my fear, I think I just had to go through it. A lot of it was about, I think going into it, I had a lot of fear about childbirth, especially with being a Black woman, and just hearing a lot about mortality and complications for Black women in giving birth. And so that was something that really challenged my experience a bit, or interfered a lot. And so especially going into the C-section procedure, I was so nervous about something happening or bleeding or something like that. And so I think, you know, honestly, that fear, it continued until the procedure was over. And, you know, once it was done and I was out of the operating room, that's when I felt the relief. But I think that's a lot of where that fear was coming from.
Which is a valid, I mean, all fears are valid, but considering the state where we're in right now, and that is something, the outcomes for Black mothers is something that is very up in the news, and it's something that people are paying attention to and trying to do things to change it. Like we have awareness now, and now it's how are we going to fix this? But I can appreciate how giving birth and having a cesarean in that climate can bring on a lot more fears.
Yeah, it did. And I think looking back, you know, one thing I realized, I wish that I could have felt less fear. And because, you know, even during the procedure, I was so nervous, and I kept asking the nurses, is everything going okay? Is everything going okay? Because I needed reassurance that everything was going as it should be. Or even when, you know, I heard the babies cry, I still was really distracted, because I knew after that there was also birthing the placenta, and I still was asking, you know, are we still going okay? Is still everything still okay? And so I felt like in that moment, you know, when he was born and they did, they brought him to my face and my chin, I couldn't be in the moment. And that, looking back on it, kind of sucks, but I think that's just what fear does. It takes you out of the moment. It's really hard to be present. And luckily after that, I was able to be present with the baby and do some skin to skin. But in that moment during the C-section, it was tough. It was tough because my mind wasn't prepared for it. I was really fearful. And so that really interfered a lot.
That's a really hard place to be, especially as your baby is being born and not being able to, you know, be there and connect, appreciate that moment, because you've got so many other concerns that are valid, right? So did you, when you said you did some skin to skin, was that once you got out and immediately in the while you were in the recovery room?
Yes, so I will say that despite all my fears, the nurses, the doctor, everything was, they were so great. They were so great. They answered all my questions, even when I kept asking, is everything okay? Someone always let me know that things were going well. They would tell me what they were doing. And so as soon as baby came out, they wiped him down a little bit and put him close to my face. And so my husband was actually like holding the baby so the baby could put his face and his hands on my chin and my face. And so we did that while they were, I guess, sewing everything up to finish out the procedure. And then once I was out of the operating room, they brought the baby in and I could do actual skin to skin on my chest and breast. And so that was really nice, and trying to see if he could latch. And so we did that for about an hour too, just me, him, and my husband in the room. So that was really nice too. Right after the procedure, we did that.
And how and the baby, your baby was fine. Like, how were his Apgars? How his cry was strong? How much did he weigh? How'd he do?
Yeah, he was great. Everything was great. Apgar was great. Baby's cry was super strong. And then also he weighed 6 pounds, 14 ounces, and he was 20 inches. He was about a week early, so he did pretty well.
I was gonna
He
say
did
that's a
really
good
well.
size for being 38 weeks. And how did during that hour with breastfeeding, was he interested? Did he latch? How did that go?
So that did not go as well, but at the time I wasn't as concerned about it because the nurse came and helped me a little bit and she said, he's still just kind of sleepy. So, just keep trying, but if not, just keep doing skin to skin. So he never really latched. He was just very sleepy. So we just kind of let him rest on me for the next few hours or so.
And then what happened?
Yeah, so then we moved into the postpartum room, the recovery room, and yeah, I think so at that point, I think we all were just kind of like on cloud nine. We were just so happy and I was excited, but at that point my pain started to kick in and I really started to feel just the pain of having the C-section and the procedure done. So, right after that, there was a lot of managing my pain, which we were trying to do. So I got some medication for that, and just a lot of resting and holding baby. One thing that I think did not go as well was the breastfeeding in the hospital in the latching, because unfortunately he did not latch well in the hospital at all. But then also, it seemed like my colostrum was a little late. And that was something I learned after the fact that could happen sometimes when you do have a C-section, the milk or the colostrum could come in a little bit later. So it seemed like to me, my colostrum really didn't come in until that next day, which made that first night in the hospital awful. Because he was tired and hungry and crying, and we were so exhausted and had no clue what to do. And the lactation consultant wasn't coming till the next morning, so we actually ended up giving him formula for that first night just so that he would get something, because he honestly didn't eat that whole day just because I was having trouble getting the colostrum to come in and he wasn't latching. So the nurse gave us some formula. Another thing I advocated for, she wanted to give him a bottle, and I just said, no, because I want to breastfeed. And so I asked for a syringe because it was just something I had read about. And so we syringe fed him at my breast for the first night or two until my colostrum came in, until I got some help from the lactation consultant.
That's hard too, because yeah, sometimes the cesareans can, and I think also more than the cesarean, I mean, it's a combination, but even all the fluids with the epidural can kind of start that process. The information is more that it's the swelling, the edema that you get from water retention that kind of gets everywhere, gets in baby, gets in you, your breasts, so it makes it harder to latch too.
Yep. I think that. And even I wonder too with like the antibiotics and all the medication, just it made things really hard. And also, I think I had a tough time just coming down off of some of the anesthesia and the medication. Because that first night too, I just felt so loopy and lightheaded and woozy, and that really scared me. So that was something we had to get through too, and the nurses were really helpful, kind of helping me with that. So that first night was probably the hardest night by far.
And it sounds like it was important for you to focus on yourself that night just because a lot was going on and you were still, but at the same time, you were still advocating for your baby and for the choices you wanted in terms of, syringe fitting him at the breast so he could still get that skin to skin and be right there and the smells and the nervous system regulation that don't necessarily
Exactly.
happen. Yeah, that's great. Did things get better when you went home in terms of his breastfeeding?
So things got a lot, well, things got better, not a lot better. Because once we were in the hospital, lactation consultant came. She showed me how to hand express and showed me that I did have colostrum and it was coming. So that was really helpful and cool. So in the hospital, he started to latch a little bit, but still not as much as we wanted. Once I got home, I have the Hakka silicone pump. And so that thing was super helpful with the colostrum. And so when I got home, what I was doing, because he still was having trouble with latching was hard for him. And so I'd do the pump, and I would get some of the colostrum, and then I would syringe feed him at the breast. We did that for about the first week, honestly, until I got another lactation consultant come to the house to help me out. Because we had a lot of trouble with breastfeeding that first few week or so, because he wasn't latching. And then also, I think part of it was I was in a lot of pain with the C-section, so positioning and everything was kind of tricky. And so I had a lactation consultant come maybe that second week. And she came and was super helpful just with positioning. But then also she encouraged me to start using a nipple shield, because one thing I learned is that my nipples tend to be fairly flat or just not as firm. And so baby kind of needs that firmness to really latch on. So we're still using the nipple shield. I've been wanting to wean off of that, but he really likes the nipple shield. So I might still try to wean off a little bit, but we're still using that, and that has been super helpful. Once I use that, he's been breastfeeding really, really well.
Good. So I was going to ask you about in this whole process of syringe feeding, and that's tough, syringe feeding for a week. During that whole process, how was his weight? Because I know that's one of the big concerns. So how much did he lose?
So he was born at 6 pounds, 14 ounces. At his first appointment, I think at that first appointment, he was maybe 5 days, no, maybe 4 days old. He had got down to 6 pounds, 4 ounces. So he lost about 10 ounces. So at that time, we really tried to kick it into gear, and it hit me like, wow, we really got to get this breastfeeding thing going, because I don't want him to lose any more weight, because I don't want any recommendations for formula right now. And so at that time, luckily we got the nipple shield, so that was working. Prior to that, I was exclusively pumping just because he wasn't latching, and that was an experience. Hours and then syringe feeding him. So I'm so glad that we're past those days. So at his 2 week appointment, he actually had got up to 7 pounds. So we were super happy about that. He regained his weight plus a little bit.
Yeah, which is
So
kind of what
hoping to.
they want to see him back to birth weight at about 2 weeks. So the fact that he was already above his birth weight then is a testament to all the really hard work that you did to get him there.
I was very excited about that. And he has a 4 week appointment on Monday, so I'm excited to see how much he'll weigh, because he definitely feels heavier.
And now you're all with the nipple shield, you're all at breast. You're not, supplementing with anything or pump, it's all directly at your breast.
Nope. Yep, all directly at my breasts. Yep. So I'm really glad about that. And again, one day we might wean off of the nipple shield. I'm going to try, but I'm happy where we are, even if we don't.
Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate your story of hearing this about your breastfeeding difficulties and how all the little things you've had to try, but that determination of and knowledge that breastfeeding is hard, even though it's natural, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't, you don't just magically exactly. know how to do it.
No, it's so hard. And I think that's something I had heard, but you know, once I experienced it, I felt it at a different level. It was, you know, yes, this is hard. It's not intuitive at all. I just feel like we've gone through so many phases with breastfeeding with him, with like the syringe feeding and then the pumping. And now he's actually feeding at the breast, but with the nipple shield. And for a while, even with the nipple shield, his latch was horrible. You know, I was getting a lot of pain at the nipple, but now, you know, a few days ago, I realized, oh, his latch has been really good. And so even with that, just him growing up a little bit and latching a little bit better. And so things just kind of gradually progressing. So it started out really meek. It's gotten so much better. And so I definitely would, you know, tell people that breastfeeding is difficult and challenging. And there were moments where I thought I should just stop, but I'm glad that I've continued. And I hope I can continue because I think it's very beneficial and definitely need a lot of support though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
so
I feel like I have.
Right. So are you still seeing a lactation counselor or consultant, and what other forms of support have you had for that?
Yeah, so I don't see her anymore. That one time was really helpful and enough, but I definitely have her on speed dial just in case I need to see her again. But other supports, I think just, again, my husband has been super helpful in all of this and just encouraging me to keep going, reminding me that I'm doing well. I also have a lot of friends, interestingly enough, who've had babies within the past month or so. And so, you know, I actually gathered them all together. We have a group me. We talk about all the breastfeeding struggles, newborn struggles. And so having that that means of support is really helpful too. Just having a group of people that I can touch base with who's going through the same thing is really really nice.
That's
so
huge.
That type of support really helps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's mm-hmm. huge. I'm so glad you've like built up your village and decided to create your own group of people. Cause that support can take on all different forms and you can like get creative and sometimes it's just phone, you know, FaceTime support, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. that works
yep,
too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you doing with your cesarean recovery and how did that go?
Mm-hmm. So I'm right now I'm at 4 weeks postpartum and I think I'm doing well. I feel like I can walk around. My pain is managed. I actually don't take any medications at this point. What helped me, I think, was of course trying to rest, but also really, you know, they encourage you to get up and walk around as much as possible. So I did that. And so it wasn't too bad. I think the first week was the worst because it was, you know, there was a lot of pain, which meant that I couldn't really do much with baby. I couldn't carry him around, couldn't hold him as much. And so really I was just doing feedings and then passing him off to my husband. But after that first week, I started to feel a little bit more mobile. My swelling was going down. So it took time, but I'm definitely feeling closer to normal.
That's awesome. I'm really glad to hear it because I don't get birth stories this early on. Like in my mind is like, he's only 4 weeks. He's a month. You're both fresh yeah. mama and fresh baby. So where are you in now with your whole experience and mental state? And is there something you would like make sure the listeners know about your experience?
Mm-hmm. Right now, I think I'm just kind of navigating maternity leave and, you know, this new identity of motherhood. I think I'm feeling pretty good. I think all the support that I have has been really helpful. So I think that's one thing that I would really want to let listeners know is that, you know, if you are able to, you know, prior to even getting pregnant and during pregnancy and prior to birth, really work on building a village and a support system, because that was one thing I did want to be intentional about. I knew that going into this, it would be a big change, and I needed to expand my social circle a little bit. And so it led me to, you know, like I said, gathering all my friends with babies and starting a group messaging, or spending more time with some of my friends who are wives and mothers, just to kind of get a feel for what that's like. And now I feel like I have such a big village of support, and that is really helpful. But also, I think just navigating maternity leave. I'm not someone who enjoys maternity leave a lot, just because I'm so used to being like the professional and working and, you know, getting all of my positive reinforcement from that. And so this is very different. So I'm trying to get used to it and, you know, tell myself that this is a new part of my identity. It's not all of my identity, and that one day soon I'll be able to integrate both of those things. And I'm really excited about that. But for now, just trying to be mindful and stay focused and learn, you know, my baby as much as possible. And recently I started driving again so I can get out a little bit. So that helps. So we're just taking it day by day.
Mm-hmm. So good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, congratulations on your and on this transformation. They all unfold very in a unique way. And thank you so much for being on the show.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if you want to hear more about Amber's first weeks with her newborn and her recommendations for a better postpartum experience, including the three things that have been vital for her mental health and the three physical things that have made her life so much easier as she cares for her baby, go to patreon.com/birthful to join the Birthful community. You'll get the extra content for this episode and all other episodes, as well as access to ad-free episodes. Rewards start as little as $5 a month. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, those amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Unspoken Stories and Love Every. Subscribe to Unspoken Stories for free whenever you get your podcast, or listen at unspokenstories.org, and go to loveevery.com, and for a limited time, use the code Birthful for $15 off your subscription. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. And if you wanted to know what Amber had for breakfast, it was oatmeal with
Greek yogurt, walnuts, blueberries, and raisins. I have one more bite, so I won't be chewing while we're recording.
I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Losada.